Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana El Bay, and this evening we will be dealing with the subject, Moorish American Identity on Contract, and what that is all about. First of all, let's deal with some things. For those of you who are new and you're on your social sites, what I need you to do is send me a friend request to Tahaka Amana El Bay, that's Tarahaka Amana, and then El, and then Bey. And the reason why I need you to do that, because all too often the social sites have me blocked because they do not like the information that I put out there. And so you can contact me, but I can't call you. One of those type of situations. Tonight, we're going to give you some very, very powerful information, some very informative information, and then we're going to follow up with part two tomorrow night so that you can get the whole gist of this thing. What we're going to do, and the reason I'm going to do this is because we have had a ton of new people coming in, a lot of people who are trying to get their nationality, trying to find out about their identity and their culture and stuff, and the brothers and sisters are waking up all across America. And so that behooves me to pretty much broadcast things, bring you up to speed, introduce you to new information and things that you can actually use for solutions to the situation that you're going through inside the United States. We are offering free articles this evening, the 14th Amendment Exposed, as well as the Commerce Game and How to Play and Secrets of America. And the way you access that is send me an email to Tahaka, Tarahaka, 53 at hotmail.com, and we'll rush that right on to you, okay? Just send me a blank email. Just say, Tahaka, send me those free articles. We'll rush it on to you, and you'll have that. Now, we have added some new information to Tahaka Archives, but we do have other things. How to get rid of your mortgage contract, because a lot of people don't understand. When you sit down with these people and you get these you're trying to get a home. And what they do is they come to you with these fraudulent contracts, but it all appears to you to be all legitimate. You have no idea that the system is fraud. So we have packets and information on how to deal with that, how to, you know, get out of it, how to deal with your student loan, if you got child support problem, whatever these contracts are set up, we got something for it. Also, dealing with the cancellation of all contracts. And this information is very, very powerful, step-by-step situation. You can do it yourself, actually. But what we like to do is we like to walk with you hand in hand so that we can make sure that it get done right, over, finished. Because if you've got, say, for instance, if a person got a mortgage, you're paying $1,000 a month for a mortgage. That's $12,000 a year. Then on top of that, you got property taxes. And so, you know, all these things. So you need to learn how to deal with this stuff, and you need the tools to get the job done with. And that's where we come in and aiding you and getting that done. I want to commend the brothers and sisters who have gotten talkers archives here lately. You're well on the way to setting up your estate. You're dealing with your A4Bs and you're discharging your debt. You got your support systems in place. You are getting identification to operate in commerce. You're able to set up your affidavits to deal with the sheriff department and all these things and how to handle yourself in court. I commend you on having the sense to go ahead and relieve yourself of the burdens that you're suffering in these robberies and stuff. Now, tonight we're going to deal with the following questions. Don't miss this powerful broadcast. If you just happen to pass by here, don't do that. How important is racial identity? We're going to deal with that tonight. Is your birth certificate an identification or a form of identification? What is the most important lesson we should learn about contracts? What part does admiralty law play in this whole thing? Okay? And that's where we're going to start. We're going to deal with that so we can get a basic foundation of that, and then we're going to get into the real nitty-gritty of what we're talking about. Dr. Amos Wilson has released some very powerful information in regards to your identity and where we are and what you need to do about it. And we're going to introduce you to that. Those of you who do not know who Amos Wilson is, tonight you'll get a chance to learn and for the first time. I know there are a lot of you who are going to listen to this broadcast after it's over who are aware and who have listened to Dr. Amos Wilson. Very, very powerful brother. Gets straight to the point. No holds barred, bottom line, do or die, brother. And he don't do no cussing. Very articulate, very intelligent. But he has this style of delivering stuff to you where, and there's no doubt about it, it is plain and simple, right smack dab in your face, gonna tell you what you got to do about that. Okay? Now, the first thing I want to say personally is one more time, for those of you who are new, the United States of America is a corporation. It operates under a continuous series of contracts, point blank. It does not interfere with your right to create your own contracts. You got it? All right, I'm going to leave that right where it is. So we can get down and saying, we're going to ask for some audience participation. If you got questions or comments, if you got problems with your student loan debt, if you got want to know about your mortgage situation, if you just go ahead and raise your hand, and we'll open up the lines, because we're gonna later on in the broadcast we're gonna open up the lines for questions and comments, and we'll do the best we can to help you out with that thing. Now, to contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, directly, you simply dial area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll work with you. For those of you who want to register with your government, you go to www.moorishamericangov.org. Register there, dial into the national conference calls. And I'm over there on Wednesdays, once a week on Wednesdays now. We just did two broadcasts back to back, but I'll be coming back Wednesdays, and we'll be teaching on law, contract law, and various things there. And the number to dial there is 256-1200. That's 559-726-1200. The access code is 107985, and you press the pound key. 107985, and press the pound key. Okay, and that's how you do that. Now we're going to go into our first segment, and it's going to be brief and to the point. And after we do that, then we're going to get directly into answering the question about that birth certificate. We need to know about that thing. Is that identification? What is it? What's the whole skinny on that thing? And in between that, we're going to be communicating with you if you're ready, if you have questions or comments, and we open it up so that we can deal with the situation. Okay? All right, here we go. Y'all hold tight. Get this under your belt. You got to understand this part right here. Very important for you to understand.
Understanding words is what you really need to start doing. You need to start doing your homework and understanding words. If you put an S in front of words, it becomes swords. And that's what words are. They're cutting. They can cause you great trouble. Humans are word control creatures. So we need to establish what words mean. Again, when we talk about law, there's a Roman maximum in law that says, "For he that would be deceived, let him." Simply meaning, if you are so ignorant as to be deceived, then that's your business. That's your problem. So you need to do your homework and find out what words mean, especially in relation to law and government. Because there is a world of occultism that is operating today throughout the world, in which you use certain words, and when those words are used in a court, they don't mean the same thing at all. Understanding law and the words of law, there are two things that this planet has: water and earth, water and land. Consequently, there are two kinds of law: the law of the land and the law of water. You've heard the term law of the land, but in point of fact, that's precisely what this word means, law of the land, because it is the people who live on land. And that is opposed to something else called the law of the high seas, or the law of water. You need to understand the difference. The law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on the land. And so consequently, the law of the land is different in every country. You can do things in America you can't do in Russia. You can do things in Africa you can't do in England. So the law of the land is the law of the culture that lives on that particular land. However, there is a higher law that dominates the entire world. It's called the law of the water, or the law of the high seas. The law of water is referred to as the law of money. It doesn't matter what color you are, where you're from, or where you live. Money is money. And any time you're doing banking or using money, you are now under the law of water, maritime admiralty. If you go back in history, in ancient history, where all of this began, back in the land of Cana, and you probably have heard in the Bible, the land of Cana. The Canaanites were Phoenician bloodline. And in the ancient Phoenician language, Cana meant merchant banker. The very word merchant comes from mer, M-E-R, for the sea, for water. As in mermaid, we have merchant. Merchant bankers. Let me give you an example of the difference between the law of water and the law of the land. The law of water, as I said, is a law of banking, money, as opposed to the law of the custom of the people or the law of the land. The Statue of Liberty must be put in water. It could not be put on American land as such. It had to be put in the harbor because it's not the Statue of Freedom. It's a Statue of Liberty. Liberty is what a sailor gets when he pulls into port on a ship. He gets liberty. He's not free. So America is not the land of the free and the home of the brave. We're not free or brave. Period. We're not free. This is not a free country. Now let me give you an example of how this law of the water works. Why is it that you have to go to court? People are always concerned about going to court. You go to court because you play basketball and tennis on a court. How do you play tennis on a court? You play with a racket. Why? Because that's what it is. It's a racket. And make no mistake, they do not pick words by chance. These words are very serious. They do not use words and terms with no avail. These words are very important. When you go into a court, what's the idea of going to court? It's a game, like basketball. The whole idea in a court is to put the ball back in the other guy's court. One team gets up and they throw the ball over to that team of lawyers. That team gets up and throws the ball back into their court. And consequently, it's a ball game. And the judge is wearing a black robe, so he is the referee. The judge is the referee. He doesn't care which side wins or loses because he's going to get paid anyway. So he couldn't care less. He's merely there as a referee, and that's why he wears a black robe. And that's another interesting subject we can get into later. But the judge is a referee between two teams. The judge, we are told, rules from the bench. The word bench in Latin is a bank. Therefore, the judge rules for the bank. Where do you find banks? You find banks on both sides of a river. They're called river banks. And what does a river bank do? It directs the flow of the current. See? The juice. Consequently, your money is currency because it's the flow, the cash flow. And I'll give you an example of how this works. When a ship pulls into a harbor, all ships are referred to as female. Airships, rocket ships, sailing ships are always female. Why? There's a very good reason. Maritime Admiralty Banking Law says all ships are female because they're carrying items. They're carrying items for money, and so consequently, they are under maritime admiralty law. Admiralty is where we get the word admiral, admiral of the Navy. Let me give you an example of how this works. When a ship pulls into harbor, it parks at the dock, and it ties off at the dock. The captain has to provide for the port authorities a certificate of manifest, because yesterday the ship was not here, but this morning the ship pulled in, so it has manifested. So consequently, all the products, the $800 million worth of TVs or Toyotas, have manifested. So each one of those items coming off of that ship has come off of water. And each end, they have come in a ship. And consequently, on a ship, all ships have a captain. The word captain comes from a Latin word, capital, money. So the captain represents the money that's on board the ship. And as I said, the captain has to present to the port authorities a certificate of manifest for each and every item. How much does it weigh? What color is it? How many doors does it have? Etc. And consequently, the captain presents a certificate of manifest. The ship is sitting in its berth. Wherever a ship sits when it docks is called its berth. She sits in her berth, berthing a ship. Consequently, all the items, as I said, coming off that ship represent money. They came in on water. They are maritime admiralty product. And this is true all over the world. Now, when you were born, your mother's water broke. And when your mother's water broke, you came out. And this is why you have to have a birth certificate, because you are a maritime admiralty product under international law. You are considered, your body is considered a maritime admiralty product. Your mother delivered you. This is why if you go to Sears and buy a refrigerator, they will ship it to you. They will deliver it. And that's why you were in your delivery room. Your mother was delivering a product. Maritime Admiralty, you came down your mother's birth canal. And once you and as you're taking one of the televisions or the cars off the ship and it falls down and breaks, that's all right. Sometimes they're stillborn, so consequently you've lost money on that one. Therefore, you have to have a death certificate, and it's always signed by the doc. The doc has to sign your birth certificate and your death certificate. All of these words and terms are Maritime Admiralty banking words. And therefore, if you understand lawyers and judges and courts and government are all under international Maritime Admiralty law. All religions, all churches in the world operate under maritime law. This is why all churches are divided into denominations, like 20s and 50s and 100s. Serious. This is why they're called denominations, because all churches are nothing more than the product of Maritime Admiralty banking. It's an extraordinary story of occult treason, high treason and crimes against the state. Make no mistake about it. There has never been a country on the face of the earth as far back into history as you can go. There has never existed a country in which the people rose up and demanded their right to be free. Never. The concept of human, spiritual, intellectual, and physical freedom is a totally concept that has never, ever existed on the earth. The only time that has ever come into existence was the founding of this country, where it was understood that we were sovereigns and we owned our bodies, and consequently, since 1868, we're now on the International Maritime Admiralty Law. Think about this. When cowboys and Indian movies, when the cowboys would ride into town, they get off the horse, they were wearing guns. How come they could walk into a bar carrying guns? And if two guys got in an argument, they could go out on the street and draw on each other in front of the sheriff's office, and the sheriff would do nothing. How come? How come that men could go out in the street and shoot each other in front of everyone and had nothing be done about it? The reason why is because before 1868, all Americans were considered sovereigns. And that's one of the nice things about being a sovereign, is you have the right to be yourself. And consequently, you need to understand that in one last point I'm going to make before I introduce your speaker, that in 1868 there was a corporation founded, and anyone can incorporate a company. Well, in 1868 there was a company incorporated, and in that particular company, the founders of that company called it, they referred to it as the United States Corporation. And they stipulated that anybody who would be a member of that corporation or work for that corporation would be called not an employee, but a citizen. So today, if you are asked, are you a citizen of the United States, what you think you're being asked is, are you lawfully in this country to do business? That's not lawfully what's being asked. They didn't ask if you were in America lawfully. They ask you a specific question. Are you of your own volition, out of your own mouth, testifying that you are a citizen of the United States? Because in that way, citizen of the United States means you are an employee of a foreign corporation operating on international maritime law. So today, the president of the United States is the president of a privately owned company. The company is called United States. And the word president is always a word that is used in corporate law. Banks have presidents. All companies have presidents. So there's a corporation called United States, privately owned, and it has a president. President Bush is not the president of America. President Bush is the president of a privately owned company. Privately owned, out of England. And you need to understand words and terms. Because I believe that there is a divine presence in the universe that men call God, and one day that divine presence is going to move on the earth, and we're going to see freedom come back to this world. And when it does, you're going to need to understand words and terms and how they have been used to trick you.
Okay, Moses, we're back. I think that was a ton of bricks that laid the foundation for what's really going on, the fabric, the foundation of this house. So now that we know how this thing is set up, that puts us in a position to be able to get out of the muckety muck and deal with the quagmire. Now, he started out telling us the most important part of it all, and that means understanding the words, understanding the terminology, because if we can define all of the words that they're using to put together to maintain the stranglehold of the people and keep you running out of your house every day, slaving and year after year after year, never being able to really make any significant things or do any kind of real living, then it behooves us to learn what we have to do in order to be free. There are tons and tons and tons of people across the United States who the streets and highways are filled with them. 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're rushing and rushing and they're running late, and they get up on Monday morning and they shower, shave, get a cup of coffee, make a beeline to work. And if they pass that Ford going up on the expressway, they know they're on time. But then if they rushing and they're running behind and they see that red Chevrolet, it's, oh, Lord, I'm running late. And so we do this for 365 days a year, and we don't seem to get anywhere. We seem to stay in the same position over and over and over. So therefore, there's something wrong, and we got to change. And the starting point is to learn what's going on. What is the bottom line? What is taking place that I don't know, that I need to know in order to change my circumstances? Now, we're going to go on to this thing one more time and get a little bit more in-depth in it, and then we're going to come back and start dealing with the solutions to the problem. So y'all sit tight.
Have you ever wondered why it is necessary to have a birth certificate in this country and many other countries like Canada and the United States? When you were born, an event was registered onto a piece of paper, which your parent or parents signed with your name on it and signature of the doctor. That is known as a live birth record. Out of that document, the government of Canada has created a birth certificate with your name on it in all uppercase letters. They extracted it from the live birth certificate. On the birth certificate, it shows on the front your name, the day you were born, the place you were born, the date of creation of the birth certificate, the date it was issued to you, which is usually the age of 5 because of school, certificate number, gender, registration number, the province, government stamp with words written underneath, certificate extract from registration. On the back, it says province, alphanumerical digits in red color. Some say it's a bond number on the stock market and it's worth money. Others say it's the number which represents our obligations to pay debt. First time births were recorded was in England in the year 1837. North America, recording birth events and registering birth certificates did not happen until 1915 in the U.S., and shortly after 1933, it became a known practice in Canada and the U.S. So before 1933, which was only 79 years ago, there was no such thing as a birth certificate in Canada. To fully understand the agenda of the birth certificates, we have to take a look at what was happening in the United States. The agenda behind birth certificates had three motives, which was put into action specifically by Woodrow Wilson, and Edward Mandel House, and the people that pulled their strings. The three motives are, number one, to keep record of all human beings living on the landmass of Canada and the United States. Number two, national debt. President Woodrow Wilson is the one who enacted the Federal Reserve Act, giving the Federal Reserve Bank power to create the United States currency. This is money being created for the U.S. out of thin air with compounded interest attached, lent to the citizens, is what put the U.S. economy into an engineered debt, which was designed so that it could never be repaid. This is a private corporation, guys. This is not a government corporation in the States. Because this debt is perpetually growing by the minute, the government has put its citizens as collateral to these bankers, and the birth certificate played a role in this. In Canada, it's the same thing. Our national debt stands at a whopping $590 billion and counting because the Bank of Canada is not being used properly. Like, Canada's federal debt grew steadily between 5% and 10% per year until 1975, when it began to explode, growing for the next 12 years at more than 20% per year. It broke the $100 billion mark in 1981 and the $200 billion mark in 1985. If the Bank of Canada didn't contract its work out to foreign corporations, our debt would not be nowhere as near as high as it is right now. This has happened because the Bank of Canada, like I said, has contracted its work to print our money to companies like BA International, who create money out of thin air and lend it to us, which eventually we have to pay back with compounded interest attached. That's not regular interest, that's compounded interest. The debt can mathematically never be paid back by the way this system of money creation is designed. The red numbers and letters on the back is said to represent our pledge to pay back the debt, and that money generated has been rumored that it goes into the Consolidated Revenue Fund. For more information on the Bank of Canada, please refer to our previous articles on CanadianAwareness.org. Go to the search bar, type in Bank of Canada. And also check the description of this video for a link. The third motive is the creation of the legal fiction. Governments cannot control free will human beings. In order to control the humans have to first give up some type of consent to give power to these governments. They know people do not give up their rights and freedoms willingly. Have you ever wondered why your name is all in capital letters when you get mail sent to you from banks, governments, and when you get the bills? The government created a fictional entity for you to use in the system. It is basically a corporation, all capital letters. This is known as the legal name in legal terms. The name in all capital letters is not you. So from the original document that your parents signed creates the birth certificate that we carry in our pocket. It also creates our Canadian citizenship. From that tiny birth certificate that we carry in our pockets, it's also used to create other forms of identification, such as health cards, SIN cards, and driver's licenses. And we'll touch down on SINs and driver's licenses in a bit. Without the birth certificate, those other things couldn't exist in the realm of the government Canada's rules and regulations. People are swayed to believe that they are these pieces of plastic and paper. To me, this is outrageously silly. The government has manipulated generations of people, convincing them that they are the birth certificate and they are the plastic identification. In factual truth, the birth certificate and other identifications are nothing more than legal fictions. That's right. Created by the government. When people represent their identification, they are representing the fiction the government created, and this fiction is bound by government rules, restrictions, and taxation. So when Parliament makes laws, and when one reads those laws, which are known as statutes and acts, and when it refers to those that are bound by it, it refers to them as persons or subjects. Well, there are regular definitions and legal definitions of words, and when it comes to Canadian law, all definitions are defined by the legal dictionaries. When it comes to legal definitions, there are two types of persons. One, legal person, and two, natural person. The legal person, or legal name is the identification, the fictional entity, and the natural person is the human being, conscious and divine, free thinking. So let's look at some legal definitions. Legal name is the name that an individual is given at birth and or recognized by a government or other legal entity, or which appears on birth certificate, marriage certificate, or other government-issued document. Legal person. A legal person, in brackets, also artificial person, body corporate, also commonly called a vehicle, please take note of that, has a legal name and has rights, protections, privileges, responsibilities, and liabilities under law. They're not specific as to what law, but it's liabilities under statutory law. Take note of the words artificial, corporate, and vehicle. It is not a real living thing. It is a fiction. It is a name that is used as a vehicle in their system. Natural person. Natural person is a real human being, as opposed to legal person, which may be a corporation or state. Yes. That is the legal definition of natural person. So to be clear, you are a natural person, and your identification is the legal person. The citizens do not own this small piece of paper, the birth certificate. The government owns it, and hence why it is stamped. Let's recap the three reasons why birth certificates exist. It is to keep statistics and records of all humans' births information, make us collateral to the banks that lend the country the money, and use our hard-earned money to pay back the debt, and create the legal fiction, and fool us to believe we are the legal fiction so that we become bound by statutes, acts, and taxation. Soon, every American will be required to register their biological property in a national system designed to keep track of the people. We can compel the people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for a fiat paper currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value. Yeah, so let's take a look at the similarities between warehouse receipts and birth certificates. Both document the date of issue, serial number or certificate number, registration numbers, a description of the product or names, and a signature of an authorized informative to notify the proper government agency, which is the Registrar General, Judith M. Hartman, for the birth certificate. The reason why I'm showing you this, because I want to say, I think it's pretty fair to say that the government of Canada and the big bankers look at us like commercial products. You clearly saw in the quote of Edward, he said we'll be given a commercial value, and they look at us as citizens as a way to extort on a massive scale, enslave and make huge profits off the fruits of our labor and from the entire financial economy. Just take a look at the Vital Statistics Act, Section 1, in Canada. Birth means the complete expulsion or extraction from its mother, irrespective of the duration of pregnancy, of a product of conception. I just want to touch down on the SIN card right quick. It was created after the Depression like the birth certificate. The SIN card is extracted from the birth certificate and, in fact, makes you an employee of the federal government. Yeah, the government of Canada is nothing more than a corporation that has corporate policies that are enforced upon their employees. By you having a SIN card is, in factual truth, making you an agent of the government. If you are not an agent of the corporation known as the government of Canada, you don't have to follow the rules and regulations. Because most of the rules involve taking our money, and they convert our rights into privileges, and they also convert our rights into crimes. We will get into that a bit later. But let me put it this way. Walmart has corporate policies, and it's a corporation. It has rules and regulations for its employees, correct? Yeah. So if someone from Walmart came up to you in the street and said, hey, you're not allowed to wear sandals, and you ask them, why not? And they would, if they replied, because Walmart policy says so, well, heck, I'm pretty sure you'd laugh at them and be like, man, I'm not in Walmart. I don't work for Walmart, so buzz off, right? It's the same thing with these, you know, rules and regulations the government's making. They tricked us into being, using the sin, which actually enforces the rules and regulations. So why do you think cops always ask for ID? It is so they can find a legal person, the legal name to enforce the policies of the government of Canada. Like I said, it's the legal fiction they created. Police used to be called peace officers. Now they are called police officers, policy officers. Your driver's license is also extracted from the birth certificate. We will examine the driver's license in a few minutes. And that is how we are enslaved and deceived by the birth certificate.
Okay, Moores, here it is. You know, most people don't know that when they purchase their home and they sign the contract in the beginning that the house was bought and paid for at that point, but then they signed that old servicing agreement and they told them that the bank was going to give them a loan to go to the bank, fill out the papers, the bank don't give you any money, and the next thing you know, you got a company sending you a bill for a mortgage. We have a system to totally get rid of the whole thing. Contact us at newfreehelpgroup.com. That's newfreehelpgroup.com, and we'll show you how to deal with that. We have packages right there. Contact me, Tahaka, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll take care of you, okay? Peace.
Okay, Moses, we back. Now that we understand how the quagmire work and what they're doing on, we don't have to get excited about it, and don't get mad. Don't put your gun down. Don't go. I don't want to hurt nobody about it. We get smart about it, and the whole system is it operates on the continuous series of contracts. And the contracts is based on what is known as offer and acceptance. And we are going to get to that tonight on this broadcast. But I just want to put it in a nutshell for you so that you will understand what is called the commerce game. Once you master the rules of a game, then you know how to play. And you can play to win. And we as people of African descent, we're pretty good. Once we learn how to do the game, We go to ad libbing, we go to decorating it and doing it in style and doing it better than anybody else on the planet can do it. And this is just one more game. Okay? So we're going to go on now to the next segment, but I wanted to I have to put the basic foundational information down so that you will understand what is taking place inside the United States. Keep in mind that on August the 16th through the 18th, right here in Jacksonville, Florida, we will have the Morris Summit 2. We'll be right here in the Wyndham Hotel. And for those of you who need information about that, dial this number, area code 706-284-9808, and ask for Brother Diallo Secur. That is DiAlloSekou, Diallo Sekou. And he will explain and give you all the background information, tell you what it's about, tell you how to get here, tell you where we're going to be at, what's going on, and all of that information. And to reach me directly, you can contact me before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at area code 904-303-9061. For the free articles mentioned on the broadcast, one more time, I'll send you a request to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that to you. That is the 14th Amendment exposed, very vital for us to understand that. The Commerce Game and How to Play, and Secrets of America, and we'll get that right on to you with the quickness. Now, we're going to take a little quick break, and we will be back, okay? So y'all sit tight for a moment, and we'll get right on back.
I've got sunshine on a cloudy day. When it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. I guess you'll say, what can make me feel this way, my girl?
My girl,
my girl.
Talking about my girl,
my girl.
I've got so much honey, the bees envy me. I've got a sweeter song than the birds in the trees. Well, I guess you'll say, what can make me feel this way, my girl,
my girl,
my girl.
Talking about my girl,
my girl.
Yeah.
There shall be no racial harmony for the next 20 or 30 years, ladies and gentlemen. You got to get used to the idea. You got to get used to the idea, if you're going to win your freedom, that you're going to be disliked by a lot of people and a lot of ethnic groups. Yeah, you got to get used to living with great tension if you're going to reclaim yourself and reclaim your life. If you're trying to maintain peace and harmony with every other ethnic group, they're going to put conditions on it. You can maintain harmony if you let me sell to all your kids and you never own anything. You can maintain harmony as long as you don't disturb my economic domination. It's just like this anti-Semitism stuff that's got LIB jammed up. Oh, yeah. People, you know, at one point it's not a race, it's a religion. At another point it's a race. You know, what's going on here? The thing that you have here, ladies and gentlemen, is a political strategy.
Yes, sir.
And an economic what? Strategy. An instrument of what? Control. A means by which one can control the behavior of others. You can call it religion, ethnicity, anything you want to. But its ultimate reality is that it is used to do what? Control the behavior and perceptions of other people in the interest of the people who belong to that thing. That's all it is. And the first question you ask, and so the thing goes out, you're anti-Semitic. Now, it doesn't matter what you said, whether you told the truth or not the truth, or this or that, has nothing to do with that. Not at all. It has to do. Now, the next question you're going to ask is, oh, how can I not be anti-Semitic? Don't say this, don't say that, don't do this, don't do that, and then we won't call you what? Anti-Semitic. And so in striving to be what? Not anti-Semitic, you then what? Fall under the control of another people. Regardless as to whether they are right or wrong, or regardless of how unfair they are, as soon as you meet the requirements of not being called anti-Semitic, you're under control. And yet here's a people that's less than 3% of the American population, less than 0.1% of the world's population, who through the use of that term and through the throwing of that accusation can manipulate whole political and economic and social systems. And then they're the first one to tell you that you shouldn't talk in terms of race. And you should not use what? Your ethnic identity as a base of what? Power. And you should not use your ethnic identity as the base for political and economic strategies, you see, and as a means of what? Controlling other people's behavior and so forth, you see. Ethnicity is much deeper than the demarcation of ethnic characteristics, man. You see, and cultural characteristics, you see, are part of the totality of a people's power. And we have to understand that. And when we are training our youngsters, we have to understand that. We have to get these young men to understand, and when we're training them for manhood and the young women for womanhood and so forth, it requires that we perceive white supremacy as the major social and political and economic spiritual problem to be resolved by African people, and that we ask ourselves the question, what kinds of men and women must we produce in order to overthrow white supremacy? And overthrow white supremacy must be our goal. If you're not about overthrowing white supremacy, you're not about African-centeredness. Mm-mm. And the other thing is, if you're not about nation-building, you're not about African-centeredness either. Anyone here is talking about African-centeredness and so forth is not talking about nation-building and not talking about the building of a pan-African economic and political system is really, to my mind, not talking about African-centeredness. No, sir. Because the education of our children and what that education means, and what it should contain, and the educational experiences they should undergo, must be defined within a framework of overall purpose and goals for our people. Where are we going? What is our major problem in the world? One of our major problems in the world is white supremacy. This is not the problem of white children, you see. And an appropriate education of African children then requires that they be trained to do what? Solve that problem. And an education that does not include how to overthrow white supremacy among black people and how to destroy white power over black people is not African-centered. Mm-mm. I don't care how much culture you teach, how much history you teach, it's not about that. It's not about that. An education that is not about building a black nation and a nation within a nation and an African system of people cannot be an African-centered education. When you study economics and science and all of these other things, they must be studied within the frame of where you're going as a people and as a whole. You see? And their organization must be structured in terms of overall goals, national and international goals. When the United States has been challenged, white folk in the United States were challenged by the Japanese. They looked at what? Their educational system. And they are trying to transform their educational system and the educational experiences of their youngsters so that they can create in them the motivations and attitudes and relations that will make them possible to defend themselves against the growth of Asian power in the world. They're not just teaching them A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, how to add accounts. All of this has to be integrated under a national goal. You see, we are doing business not only just because we want to go to work and come home and buy beer and look at football, but because doing business in this way and relating to each other this way and doing accounting in this way and so forth allows us as a nation to protect our interests, to maintain our style of life, to maintain our freedom and independence, even though you as an individual think you are just going to work and coming home. You see? And think you're just drinking beer and looking at the football game. But frankly, if you look at the totality of the way the economic and political system operates, you're a part of a total system, and what you do is integrated in a system that is designed to act in the world. Now, we as African people then must lose our unconsciousness in this system. We must become conscious of ourselves as workers, as professionals, as this and that, and whatever we are, and be aware of how what we do is integrated and related to the whole of African people and to African ends and purposes. So it is not enough just to gain skills or just to gain knowledge. You must ask skills for what, knowledge for what, and in what way does my skill and my knowledge contribute to the advancement of African people as a whole? In what way can these skills be institutionalized and be built into the culture such that our culture expresses itself as power? I'll end it here. We talked the other day about white global supremacy, the other evening, Wednesday, and I wanted to get my people to understand, though, that there's a crisis in white global supremacy. White global supremacy is in severe, severe crisis. In fact, we may be witnessing the decline and fall of white supremacy in the world. That's why, again, I mentioned other ethnic groups, you know, because we get too caught up on what white folk are doing. We're going to look up one day and find that white folk ain't even in control of the world anymore. That's right. That what we're dealing with are what? Asians.
That's right.
Yeah. The Asians have already called this the Asian century.
That's right.
They call it this what? Consciously. They know exactly where they are going and what they want to do. And don't get caught up in this idea because they ain't white, they're in your favor. Oh, yeah, we like to get that up, you know. We like to get on that kick. Non-white, you heard. The Japanese have already given you a taste of how they feel about you. The Japanese have the highest, probably the highest racial superiority complex of any group on this globe. Oh, yeah, you just don't hear about that part. They have even Koreans over there they haven't assimilated yet. Yeah. Chinese as well. Very chauvinistic, very superiority-oriented ideas of who and what they're about. If you think you're going to get a better break under the Chinese, a better break under the Japanese, or these other people, you got another thought coming. You must understand the situation. The United States is in terrible trouble. You haven't even heard about the trouble yet. You're sitting here wishing Bush is going to do something to, what is that man's name? Clinton. You have to understand the American presidency isn't the power it used to be. Not at all. The American presidency cannot exhibit the kind of influence in the world that it used to exhibit. And you must recognize that even the United States' internal economy is to a good extent out of its control. Yes. Yes. You got to understand what's going on here. That many of the restructuring, that this country is in so much debt that it cannot even rebuild its infrastructure and its highways and the other things that it needs to be. That it lived during the whole of the 80s on the goodness of the Japanese. That this country was not financed by white Americans at all. No. One day we'll have to talk business and talk about bonds. How is a government in debt? Anybody have an idea how a government goes in debt? What do we mean that a government is in debt? Huh? What is a bond? You hear it every day, stocks and bonds. We hear it every day, stocks and bonds. What is a bond? It's essentially a what? Loan. It's a loan. Corporations raise money through bonds. They sell stock. That's one way of raising it. And if they go poop, you're through with it, right? You're on stock. It's over. They also raise money through bonds. When you buy a bond, you are lending money to a corporation or to a government. And so government finances itself through selling bonds. And its bonds are rated just the way your credit is rated. And these bonds are bought by banks, just the way banks lend you money. Insurance companies and individuals, if they have enough money. And they are bought by other governments. You see. So with the United States being overburdened, spending much more than it could afford, sold bonds, and the Japanese and the Taiwanese have what? Bought those bonds. This means that the United States government and the governmental system and economic system is in hock to the Asians already. You understand what I'm talking about? Am I clear? They've been such hock, and their money and wealth has flown out to such a degree until they're even borrowing more money from foreign banks than domestic banks. They're in such hock that their industry is now going into partnerships with foreign companies. And in going in business with foreign companies, they are selling them their technology before they can even develop it within this country. They're selling them their knowledge and technique. They are shipping out their research and development facilities now. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir.
Huh? That means the basic infrastructure, the economic infrastructure of the United States is being shipped out and sold, lock, stock, and barrel, to other people and to other nations. And that's the thing that Clinton is facing today. They've given away money to the middle class. So they made you think they was giving it all to the poor. But actually the people who make over $100,000 and $50,000 get more money out of the U.S. government than people who make under 10. Yeah, that's the reason why they have the problem. They call it entitlements, but you never hear them discuss what entitlements are, do you? You think when they say entitlements, they're referring to welfare people, right? No, no. It's the fact that they have given this money to middle classes and upper middle classes and permitted them to rob the government now. And now politically it's difficult for them to do what? Take it back. In fact, Clinton wants to give them what? More. But now he's recognized that the debt is so terrible that he may have to go back on that promise. That's terrible. That means there's a crisis here. Tremendous crisis. You think that you're going to get by just getting skills? You got another thought coming. I told you the other evening that within the Russian economy, you could pay a Russian physicist, top flight physicist, $20 a month. The ruble's value is in such a relationship to the United States until you can hire a top flight Russian physicist, a number one, for $20 a month of American money. There are engineers in India Indonesia and other places that are if not better educated than American engineers. And therefore, many companies now have not only beginning to ship their manufacturings out to these countries, they're beginning to ship their research and developmental facilities out, which means even their creative ideas and other things will be generated in other nations. Do you understand what I'm telling you? There are people in Ireland today processing data for Reader's Digest out here in Hightstown, New Jersey, wherever. Yes. Sitting at computer terminals, handling all the subscriptions and everything, and taking that information from Ireland directly into the main computer there. They don't have to hire input people here at all. And they're doing it for for a third of what they pay. There are people with MBAs over there being paid half of what an MBA is paid to process information. But you got to know what the hell is going on in this world. Do you understand? And understand the situation and the circumstances we face as a people. And you can see then why they're in the jail and why what's going to go on. You haven't seen the worst of it yet. You haven't begun to see the worst of it yet. This is why you got to transform your education. You just can't say, get an education, get a skill. So what skill? Do you know often, too, as things become even more automated and so forth, you don't need those skills. Because the friendlier the computer becomes, the less skill you need in programming it, don't you? Yeah. So anybody can work it. And if anybody can work it, why not take it to Mexico? Why not take it to Indonesia? Why not take it over here? So they work the whole thing, man. We'll talk about it another day. We'll talk about how these ghettos have been created deliberately by the economic system here and what's going on here. You got to understand this, though. But the Japanese and the Asians are outstripping this country. And this country feels that if it is to compete, it must then move into the global market and operate in a global system, which means to a great extent denuding its own people. Denuding even what? White folk. Not only black folk, but white folk. They're telling you, on one hand, how they need all your skills and all your competence, and yet what did I tell you the other evening? GM is firing 74,000 people. IBM is getting rid of 20 or 30,000 people. Come on, what are you talking about? How are you going to tell me you need more skills, and what's happening? You're getting rid of all your skilled people. Come on. There's something wrong here. There's a hoax being played here. And then on the other hand, they'll tell you, and you hear it every day, that it is the small companies that are generating what? Employment in America, not the large companies. The large companies are what? Shrinking and fading away. And that the future employment possibilities in America lies with the development of small businesses. That's the time now, you see. You don't got to build steel companies, ladies and gentlemen, African men and gentlemen. You don't have to build now big IBMs and all these other stuff to compete now, because the weight lies with what? The smaller companies. Understand what I'm saying? And so in a sense, the crisis of this democracy, or whatever you want to call it, represents our what? Our opportunity. You see, the European system is in almost complete disarray. As a matter of fact, the economic system, if you understand and look at it closely, one of the things you find out is you can't understand it. Even the Europeans don't understand it. Oh yes, it's dangerously out of control. Very dangerous, very precarious. If you read Economist magazine some months back, they had a long piece on they really don't know what's going on there. You understand? But you see the Russian Empire has collapsed, and collapsed in terms of what? Ethnicities and groups and so forth, after 40 and 70 years of telling these people, oh, communism is godless and it is raceless and it is classless. And what's the first thing that happened when communism fell down? Race, class, and God start fighting. Okay? People started killing each other in terms of what? Race, God, and class. So after what? 70 years of communist propaganda and control of the Russian Empire, the old bugbear, what? Ethnicity raised his head. And you want to sit around here and think a little belief in Christianity and a little belief in Islam is going to take racism out of the world. You got another thought coming. No way. It ain't over by a long shot.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Let's talk about Moorish American Identity on Contract. We just finished listening to Dr. Amos Wilson, as he has delivered some very, very powerful food for thought. If anyone have any questions, if you are having some problems with how to deal with these contracts that bind us and stuff, go ahead and raise your hand, open up the line. You can tell us what's going on, and we can deal with that. Now is the time. The lines are open. We put it in the chat room, so it's up to you now to deal with the solutions. Brother Pianke, I see you up in there. I heard about that the other day. Oh, okay. All right. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to crisscross and go back. We're coming back to Brother Amos Wilson because he has a tremendous amount of very powerful information to discuss with us. But we're going to deal with something else right now. And keep in mind, if you want to discuss something, you got a question, you need some aid with something, go ahead and raise your hand. Okay?
Good Friday evening. Good to have you with us. This is First Take Live. Hey, listen, tonight's show, boy, I'm going to tell you, you're going to have to put your hat on and be really focused to listen to what my guest is talking about. We're going to be talking about, is there such a thing as financial security? Is there such a thing as that? And my guest tonight is a gentleman by the name of Vic Beck, and he is, I call him a financial truth educator. I'll tell you a little, before I introduce you to him, I'm going to tell you a little bit how I met him. A number of years ago, I read this book called The Creature from Jekyll Island, and I was given this book to read, and that's the cover there. And when I finally read that, I thought, oh my gosh, what is going on? And so what I did was I thought, how can this be true? How could we have had the Bank Act done by a bunch of guys who were basically ramrodding the economy? So if you really want to be shocked about how the bank works, the Federal Reserve, you'll read that book. And then what happened was someone told me about this guy who was kind of taking on the institutions, although he's quieted down since then because he found out he didn't have to fight so hard. And I went to listen to this gentleman in Coburg, and I recorded the talk, and I kept playing it back over and over again. And I said to myself, and this goes back a number of years ago, I said, one day I want to interview this guy because what he has done, what his journey has been, is really going to help us understand how come we're in so much debt, where the debt is coming from, and perhaps what you can do to remedy it if we get that far. But more importantly, tonight's show is about you learning about something that you had no clue about. And bringing us that information tonight is my guest. Welcome to the studio, Vic Beck. Good to have you.
Pleasure to be here, Jerry.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
So I saw you on stage, and we've had an opportunity to be here. So it's good to have you. Let's talk a little before we get into this thing, and I know that we're going to use the Monopoly game as a prop for you. Not that you're against the game, it's nope. You're going to use it as a tool. Before we get to that, let's talk about your journey. Your journey kind of began similar to my journey, where it started with that book,
Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yeah. So tell me about that. What prompted you to look at that book first of all?
Actually, my cousin gave me the audio, Ed Griffith's audio, which is about 45 minutes long, as you know.
Yeah.
And I sat on that for 3 months before I actually listened to it. And then when I listened to it, it resonated, and I knew, it just confirmed that I knew that things are not as they appear.
Right.
And it caused me to rethink my situation at the time, and it caused me to get on the internet and utilize the internet to search deeper into what I was hearing on this audio tape to confirm the truth of it.
And what was the sense of this thing that resonated within you? What was that sort of awakening? Like, what woke up?
Well, I think all of us have this feeling inside that something's not quite right out there.
Yeah.
And without a benchmark to know what that might be, we go through life wondering that and questioning a lot of stuff, but we don't actually do anything about it.
Right.
Or don't get the benchmark to seek something or go another path or anything like that. And so it just confirmed for me what I'd already known inside, that things are not as they appear out there, that what I'm being told is not necessarily the truth.
Well, and thank goodness for books. I mean, we also know that when countries are taken over by certain governments, the first thing they do is they burn the books because they don't want people to get knowledge.
That's right.
Right. So this is all about knowledge, and we're still able to get it in this country and in other countries still, and the internet has been a big source of that. So then take me a little further down the road. So now you get this knowledge, you wake up, and you go, okay, now, everything you believe, that point that you believe to be true, was not.
Was confirmed not to be true, but it was, again, it was confirming what I'd already known, but was in denial or just wasn't admitting. But it's that little thing that we all have inside.
Right.
You just know when something's not right, but you don't necessarily know what it is.
Okay. So now let's move a little further down this. So now in this book, The Creature of Jekyll Island, they talk about the creation of the Federal Bank and the bank, and we could also, in the U.S., call it the Fed. And today, of course, in Canada, we call it the Bank of Canada.
Correct.
We think that those institutions are actually owned
by the government.
By the government.
That's correct.
And they are?
Not.
Not.
The federal, U.S. Federal Reserve is no more federal than Federal Express.
Okay.
It's a private organization. It's owned by private cartels, private individuals, investors. And it has nothing to do with government. And in fact, if you look in the blue pages of the government phone book, the phone numbers are not listed under government agencies.
Okay.
For those institutions. So they are really separate. They're part of the game, but they're separate from the game, and they are, in fact, privately owned cartels.
Right. So when people are saying they're talking to the Federal Reserve, or in this case, talking to Bank of Canada, we're really not talking to anything but yet another private enterprise.
Absolutely.
Right.
Just a business like any other business.
Right. Now, that shocks most people because they think the Bank of Canada is no more the Bank of Canada than Garth of Canada.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you are the bank.
Oh, I could. Well,
but it's a perception.
Okay.
And people, I guess, you know, believe that this is a bank for the people or of the government, but in fact, it's not. It's a private cartel. And like the bank would dictate to your life if you've got debts, they dictate to the government how to run their affairs just as much as they dictate to the people.
Okay. All right. So now, I guess we want to go a little further down. We talk about financial, to answer the question at the bottom of the screen, financial security. Is there such a thing in your mind?
Absolutely not.
And yet people have thousands and thousands of dollars, RSPs, assets and everything else that they've accumulated money because they think that's what they need to have. And you say that is still not financial security.
Nope. And I think if people analyze or review their lives, especially the older generation, it doesn't seem to matter how much you work, you never really seem to get ahead.
Right.
You know, you might get a bigger house and a second car, but the debts are still there. The disposable income is not there, and it seems like it's in our minds that we're going to achieve this success in the future, and the future never does actually come. And there's reasons for that, though.
Okay.
And that this is the, I guess, maybe why I'm here, is to share some math with respect to working for a living, the difference between gross pay and net pay, if you will.
All right, let's start there. Let's start at gross pay. You wanted, so this is everybody needs to take notes, because having an audience with you is, because you don't do seminars anymore.
Only if asked, and I've just kind of gone a little bit private there because there is a lot of confusion out there in the marketplace, and I just kind of, I don't know, I got a message there that maybe people are happy where they're at and to not share some certain things with them.
Right.
That might rock their world and make them unhappy.
Right. But actually, if they really look at it, they could get pretty happy.
But, yeah, if we go to the extent we talked about earlier.
All right. Okay, so let's carry on.
But
so,
the underlying cause is of the debt, if you will, is people working for a living.
So
I know that's going to sound really strange because that's what everyone does. But what we have to do is take the math into consideration here, and the math is the difference between gross pay, that is what you are paid at the face for your labor contribution.
Let's say I work $20 an hour,
yep.
And I get $20 for every hour I work,
yep.
And I work, let's say, 10 hours, so there's $200.
Yep.
Okay.
Let's just do it on a real simple figure that people can follow along with. Let's say that your gross pay at the end of a week is $1,000.
Okay, fair.
So your employer, by the gross pay, is acknowledging that the value of your contribution as an employee was worth $1,000.
Top line, there it is.
Okay, but also that's an expense on the corporation of that amount. So in other words, if a corporation pays me $1,000 to make a cup, the corporation has incurred a $1,000 expense.
Because they have to pay you for the cup you made.
That's right.
Okay.
Which means they have to sell the cup for at least $1,000 to recover the expense.
To stay flush.
That's right. To recover the expense so they can stay in business.
Right.
To do it again and again and again. The problem comes in is, so this cup is now for sale, let's say, on Monday morning for $1,000 plus PST and GST, minimally. And the problem comes in, if I may, is, and that is on when the paycheck is issued, the gross pay recognizes that the labor contribution here was $1,000, but the worker goes home with an after-tax less than of, say, $650. So on that point, the worker does not have the money to buy back the fruits of his own production.
So, yeah, he couldn't buy it back because he's only taking home $650.
Taking $650, but the cup is for sale for $1,000 plus PSD and GST.
And
we have to think in terms here, Garth, of collectively across the country. Every
person.
Every man, woman, everyone, every employee out there is doing is building cops, cars, TVs, houses, furniture, building the highways, the apartment buildings, so on
well,
and so
good
forth.
For example, let's talk about GM. Someone goes, let's say it's a $50,000 vehicle.
Yep.
Right, and it's a big hot issue today because we're all worried about jobs. So $50,000 vehicle, and you're making $50,000 a year.
Yep.
Let's just say that there was a labor exchange.
Sure.
So now, but by the time they give you your deductions and everything else, you come away with $35,000. Right.
So you
can't even buy what you're paid to build.
That's right. So in other words, I produced a car worth $50,000. I did the work, or you people are doing the work, but you don't have the means, the money available now to buy back the fruits of our own production.
But
in other words, we're short, in this case, $15,000.
And so in this case, though, but then people would say that money that you were deducted goes to pay for a lot of things that, you know, it's not just the car, but you have to pay for the roads and the sewage and all that sort of stuff. So someone's got to pay for that because someone had to build that.
Well, that's what they tell us. And but again, if I may get back to this collective thing for a moment, and keeping in mind that we people go to work for one reason, and that is to produce goods and services for each other.
True.
Not the corporation. The corporation is there to facilitate these events, but not there to reap the benefits of it because we're building cars for ourselves. Corporations don't drive cars.
Right.
Dogs don't drive cars. People do. People live in homes, not corporations. So what the people are doing when they're going to work, we're doing it for each other.
Right. I'm producing it for you. You're producing
it for me. Okay, so if we think in terms of that the collective labor contribution or gross pay, the wages paid last year, just for an example, in 2007, was $1 billion across the country. After tax, all of those workers collectively only took home $650 million.
All right. And we're going to go to break. We're going to talk about so that difference that you're kind of using as an example here is part of the problem where the debts are coming from today.
It's a big problem.
All right. We'll be right back with more of this financial truth education. You got to watch this. It's pretty fascinating. At least it's going to make you ask some questions. First Take Live continues right after this. Welcome back to First Take Live. We're talking with Vic Beck, a financial truth educator, as I call him. By the way, I just want to let you know something. That one thing that I noticed about Vic when I went to see him a number of years ago in Coburg, and since then I've heard about him, is that he's always saying to people, figure this out for yourself. I'm just telling you where I got the information, and go and check it out yourself. He says, don't believe me. Don't believe anybody.
Right.
Go and check it out. And so tonight, if you're twigged to this sort of idea, it's not done here, because you're going to get slaughtered out there if you try and take this information and don't go get the backup information. And that educator is with me right now, Vic Beck. All right. So, Vic, we talked about the difference, $1 billion. Now there's only $650 million.
Yep.
And so there's a shortfall of
$350 million,
let's say.
Yep.
Okay.
So, again, collectively amongst all the workers across Canada, collectively we are short $350 million to buy back the fruits of our own production.
Right.
We just simply don't have the money amongst all of us to buy back what we did.
Because the government only, well, there were deductions.
Deductions.
And whatever they, for whatever reason, that's all we ended up with.
That's right. And then again, on that $1 billion is PST and GST, which is another 13% on $1 billion, you see. And this is before profit taking or selling to a distributor who wants to make a profit, selling to a retailer who wants to make a profit. So that $1 billion could easily be $5 billion. And the worker still has only $650 million.
So now, you're saying that if this continues going up, we have bankruptcy.
Well, if I may pick up on that disparity again, of that difference between them, we'll just stick with the bare bones here. The maximum, the minimum purchasing price then of the goods is $1 billion.
Okay.
And the maximum purchasing power amongst the people is $650 million. So the question becomes, where are we going to get the other $350 million that we don't have collectively?
Correct. Okay.
In comes the bank.
All right.
They would be happy to lend us that $350 million that we don't have. Remember, we're the ones that did the work. We're the ones building the cars, the TVs, the furniture.
And so they're going to lend us the money to get back to where we started.
That's right. So they will gladly lend us the $350 million collectively. Everyone gets their own little loan and stuff like this. And it's, now we can buy back the fruits of our production.
So we can go get that car. We can go get that. We can get that house. We can go what we want.
Yep. But now we have to go in debt to buy back the fruits of our own production to do that. To enjoy the fruits of our labor. Remember, we're doing what we do for each other.
Right.
At the end of the day, what you do is for people. What I do is for people. What the guys at General Motors are doing is not for themselves. It's for everyone else.
Someone else gets to drive the car.
That's right. Yeah. So now we all go to the bank collectively and borrow that $350 million. But then on top of that, now we got to pay that $350 million that we borrowed, but we got to pay that back plus interest. So you see, it gets uglier and uglier as we go on here. And One thing about the interest now, to bring the interest into the equation, when the bank lends out that $350 million amongst us all, that $350 million is injected into circulation.
Okay.
Okay, but remember, there's interest on those loans.
Okay.
And that interest is not part of that loan, so that interest is not injected into the economy, but it's going to be taken out of the economy with the payments of the loan back.
Yeah, so the $350 million is now in the economy, everybody's using it.
Yep.
But the interest, the bank is taking and is holding it out, and it doesn't even go in the economy.
It doesn't exist.
It just sits there.
It doesn't exist, but it has to be paid back.
Okay.
All right. So we loan $350 million into the economy, and let's say the interest rate is 10%
okay.
over 1 year. So we have to pay back $350 million plus the 10%, so we have to pay back $385 million. But only $350 million was produced into the economy. Where are we going to get that other $35 million? Right. It doesn't exist.
Right.
Okay, now people will think, well, I'm okay, I'm not going bankrupt. So some of us will share in the ability to pay that principal and interest, and others it simply mathematically doesn't exist.
Well, let's stop here for a moment, because right now, and you're quoting something that I've already heard as well, that today, in the Canadian economy and in the U.S. economy, many people are actually paying their debts with their credit cards.
Credit cards. So they're paying debts with debts.
They're paying debts with debts. So we're talking about right now that is a certain financial failure about to happen.
Oh, well, it might happen. I don't want to go down that path.
Right.
It's looking that way, yes.
Right. Because you can't keep doing that.
No. Because when you get to the point you're paying your debts with debts, what's that telling you? You don't have the means to pay them.
Right.
So the best you can do is stave off the inevitable by, I've actually met people that they'll go out and apply for all sorts of credit cards, and they'll start moving the funds around the credit cards.
Right.
And I talked to a couple, and they said, well, they made their payments for the first year, no problem. But then come year two, now they got a $16,000 debt on one credit card that has escalated into $65,000 on other credit cards. See, that money simply does not exist in the economy.
Right.
It's not there.
Okay.
And so it becomes a dog-eat-dog world where you got to struggle to get what you can get to make your payments, which is going to cost someone else who's not going to get that ability, and that's the cause of bankruptcy. It's a mathematical fact when we play the game like this that people are going to go bankrupt. So it's not the fault of the people. It's the way the people are behaving collectively that is causing others burdens and ourselves. It's falling upon ourselves. Totally.
Well, is this where we introduce your take on using the Monopoly game board as a prop to explain the economy? Is this where we do that?
For probably a very good time.
All right. So
I find that the Monopoly game is very, people can follow along with that very simply.
You came across this one day because you were going to a seminar. You woke up in the middle of the night and you said, and you got a message, or it came to your mind. You said, use the Monopoly game. People have all played the Monopoly game.
Yep. And people can relate to
when
this
you,
game.
When you did this time, when we were talking in the green room, I'm like, Vic, thanks for bringing the game.
Yep.
All right, this is going to be kind of cool.
Because this game does represent what's going on in Canada, what's going on around the world with the buying and the selling and the commodities.
Okay, so here's the game. I'm going to hold the game up, right? So we got our game, which is called the Monopoly game, right? All right.
That's right.
We'll do this on a two-shot if we can go to the twos.
So we understand that in order to play this game, first off, a player requires a token to play.
Right, so you got. I like the shoe.
Okay, you be the ballerina, and I'll be the thimble.
Okay.
But the point is that if you don't have a token to play the game, you can't play the game.
Right, because I don't know where you are, so I got to play the game.
And the reason this is important for people, because the token in the real world is your birth certificate. If you don't have a birth certificate, you cannot get a bank account out there.
That's true.
You cannot get a social insurance number, which means you cannot gain employment. And so without the birth certificate, you cannot play the game. So although we're using this as an analogy here, this is the token to play this game, and the big game out there, it's the birth certificate that you all have that is the token, and you cannot play out there without that birth certificate. You cannot play Monopoly without a token.
Okay, that's fair.
So that's to put things in perspective for people.
All right.
Okay, so if you can't play this game and get money or pay taxes through the token on this game if you don't have a token. Same thing goes out there.
So I can't go out there and play in the game unless I have a birth certificate.
That's right. Because without that birth certificate, you cannot get a bank account.
Right.
Because you can't, let me clarify this. Without a birth certificate, you cannot get a driver's license, you cannot get passports, a social insurance card, so you have no identification to show a bank.
Okay. All
period.
Right. Okay.
So you can't play.
All right. Okay.
So the critical thing here, the main point I want to make with this is that with respect to the token, let's remember one thing here, people, that we are not the token. We're the player.
We're standing on, we're the one playing together. Like,
that's right.
We're not walking on that board. Oops,
that's right.
I thought I canceled that. We're not walking on the board. In this case, we are actually doing what?
Well, again, with the game, we need the token to play the game. And so in the real world, you need the token to play the game.
Okay.
And for example, in order to, but the key point I want to make here is that the player is not the token.
Okay.
So if the token, for example, was to land on its base on the game board here in Monopoly that required the token to pay tax, that has nothing to do with the player.
So the token has to pay, in this case, the birth certificate has to pay tax.
That's the birth certificate, the best analogy there is because there's basically 30 million people in Canada, we have 30 million participants in the game Monopoly, but we can't all get a colored token because there aren't enough colors in the spectrum for that, so we get a birth certificate with a legal name on it, each different. So now we all have a different token, a different birth certificate.
I have a Garth Riley birth certificate. That's right. So that's my token to play the game.
And interestingly enough, when I met with the Registrar General, Deputy Registrar General in Ontario, she referred to this birth certificate as a valuable token.
So let's get this straight. That you went and talked to the registrar, but that's where every birth is registered,
yep.
And she says it's a valuable token.
The birth certificate.
The birth certificate is.
And again,
it isn't who you are, it's the game piece.
That's correct. And it is not personal identification.
It is not personal ID.
She was very adamant about that. It is not personal identification.
A birth certificate is not personal ID.
No more than this token is personal identification. Remember.
Okay, all right, fine, keep going, man. All right.
The token is to play the game. The player is not the token. The player is separate from the game.
Right.
It's the token that is subject to the rules of the game, not the player.
Right.
Okay, and all the laws, rules, and regulations out there pertain to the legal name on the certificate, not the people who are the player.
Okay. Although
we need to get that in mind.
Right.
Here.
So we're just saying, for example, for a moment, our token to play the game is our birth certificate.
Yep.
But that birth certificate isn't me as a person in a physical form. It's
no.
Represented in some kind of a document.
It's a legal document.
Okay. That's all it is.
Yep.
So I am here as a person, as a natural person.
Yep.
But I am not a birth certificate.
No.
Okay.
Well, that's up for you to decide.
Well,
I don't see you as a birth certificate. But
no.
Lots of people out there, if they're asked for their identification, asked, "Is this you?" They will say yes.
Right.
It's like saying you're a token.
Right. You say, "Is this you?" You say, "No, I'm not that."
That's right. No, this is.
It's a piece of paper.
Give you a head or shake. This is me.
Okay. All right. All right. So we're gonna go. So now we're talking about this. We've got about 30 seconds before I want to go to the next break. So now that we understand that we are there. It's like the movie The Matrix, and
perfect.
That these tokens are in the game.
That's right.
Now we're gonna come back and talk about what.
Well, we're going to take a little bit further here with the relevancy and the meaning of this token and how people have got them bound themselves to the rules of this game
right.
That's being played out there because we forgot we're the player. We're separate from the game. We're not subject to any part of this thing.
It's
here.
Like we went in and we stood on the board and thought that was our role.
That's right.
All right, I like this, Vic. All right, coming back with more of Vic Bake. Beck, sorry, Beck. Beck
token.
And financial fallacies, maybe some here. Worth a look anyways. Stay with us.
You know what I can't understand? God sat around here and made all of these different ethnic groups, and then we make it holy to ignore it all. You know? Really? You know? To me, it's a yeah, it's a type of blasphemy. You know? Oh, you made all these colors, but you know, well, let's forget about all of this. Identity is based on some degree of what? Similarity. Individual interests are protected by social organization. And on some level, some group, even if they're within the same ethnic group, find some basis for similarity and some basis on which to organize as a group to protect their interests. But what they're trying to tell you is to lose any basis and foundation for connecting with anybody. But that's not the way the real world operates at all. Not at all. And now what do we have going over here? The European system is in disarray. East Germany is soaking up the wealth of West Germany. So the Russian Empire is collapsing. And what do you see coming out of here? An intense increase in what? Racism in Europe. An increase of racism over the world, ladies and gentlemen, because as the pie shrinks, as the possibilities shrink, people will tend to move in terms of their ethnicity and operate based on their ethnicity. I told people years ago that integration in America could only work in an expanding economy. It's not moral, people holding hands. It's about what? An expanding economy. We got a lot of jobs, we'll let you have a few. We'll bring you up. We don't have any jobs, we're going to cut you out. I told you before, had no book, ain't no law in the book, civil rights law in the book or in the Constitution, is going to make a white man feed your child before he feeds his own. I don't care how many books you got or laws you got or whatever you got. In the end, they're not going to feed your children before they feed their own. Only sick Negroes feed other people's children before they feed their own. Yeah. Yeah. This is the thing. And so as this shrink, other groups are going to get a part of this pie. And you're going to have to face the fact then that as you lose these jobs out of industries, and this is a lot of why the violence is going on, Detroit being completely de-industrialized almost, you see. And as these opportunities shrink, what other groups do is bump down. You see, they bump other groups out and begin to do what? Take their place to maintain their survival. You see, the days during which the men and women in Detroit could go to Ford and make a lot of money, go to GM and make a lot of money, go to the steel mills and all those things, that money. In a sense, it didn't matter to them if those other people owned the little shops and the little stores and the little this and the little that. They were doing quite well. You know, so what? I'm making big money. I'm living well. But now what happens now that those things have what? Disappeared. Something has got to move. Either you're going to say, well, I'll just be nice and kind and die and starve out here or rob and kill. Or what? I've got to what? Get control of the assets, what, that I have, what, left, you see. And you have to tell the others, no personal feelings, you know. I have anything against you, but I got to feed my children. I got to clothe my children. I got to take care of them. But you don't have anything against that, do you? That's what you told me you were doing in the neighborhood, right? That you were only taking care of your kids, right? What does this mean, then, in the long run, ladies and gentlemen? That we as African people, given the deep restructuring that is going on in the world, are going to have to find another economic way out. We are going to have to create jobs. We're going to have to create an economic system. We're going to have to employ ourselves and create means of taking care of our people. That means then that we are going to first have to capture our economic infrastructure from other groups. A number one, because you must accumulate capital and you must withdraw as much as possible of your capital from others in order to use it for yourself. And this goes on with groups all the time. Reagan did it. Why do you think the poor got poorer and the rich got richer? They ran a game called supply-side economics, which meant that if you give the people who have money more money, they will take the money and invest it and build factories and hire the people who don't. But we would put in a trick. Well, that's the supply side, you see. In other words, give it to people who got it, and they will invest it and create more. But it didn't work out that way, did it? So the laws were changed, and the system was restructured. This is what you call cutting. When jobs are cut or when programs are cut, this isn't just a cutting. This means money is being what? Transferred. It is being moved from one group or one set into the hands of other sets. So this is what you call capital accumulation. The money that was once going to the poor and so forth now is redistributed to the wealthy. Now, the wealthy, in their gracious manner, were supposed to invest it and create jobs. But that wasn't what happened. They played shell games with each other and created paper wealth and so forth, and then sold the companies off and shipped the stuff out and became international citizens and left us in the lurch. Even the whites are in the lurch. Everybody's in the lurch here, see? Now, the black community, then, must accumulate capital so that it can invest in its own infrastructure, which means then it must redistribute its money and its wealth. It must take the money back and reduce the flow of money outward to other groups, accumulate it in itself, and invest it in itself so that it can create abundance for itself. The black community now must not lament being in the diaspora, but really see the diaspora as your most powerful economic instrument. You see, while we complain about global white supremacy and we complain about white imperialism, you must also recognize that white imperialism was in effect too a white diaspora. Am I getting through? In other words, it also spread white folk where? Around the world. It wasn't just a colonizing of African people. You had colonizers. And the colonizers came to what? Live in all major areas and cities and places around the world. Using their ethnicity, they created lines of what? Communications all around the world. They built what? Commercial what? Networks all around the world, huh? They traded with each other, what? All around the world. You understand what I'm saying? So they scattered around the world, but in maintaining their ethnic identity and interests, they were able to create a global economic, political, and military system. Am I getting through to you? I know I'm keeping you a little late, but I just want to talk to you a little bit. Now then, and this is happening to the Japanese, and this is happening to Koreans and others. As they move into a global market, they disperse, what, globally. And they maintain, and they have their, what, central cities, central banking areas, and all of these means by which they maintain a global system, you see. Now, African Americans, you have great possibilities here, you see. We are spread from one end of America to the other. We're in all of its major cities. We already have national networks set up right now in the names of churches and organizations. And again, looking at the name.
Okay, Moses, we're back. What we got to look at this point here is the earlier the gentleman spoke on a national basis, but I want to get to you. My brothers and sisters, and break this down to one man, just all the way down to the ground, so you can understand what we are facing and what the solution is to what's going on. Let's say that you go to work, and I'm going to get out of my house, and I'm going to go up to the corner store. My only reason for going there, I want to buy anything because it's owned by a foreign interest. I'm going to step up there, stand on the corner, and I'm going to watch who comes in and out on Friday when everybody got paid. Everybody is rushing in there. We getting beer. We getting cigarettes. We getting scratch-off tickets. We getting all of these knick-knacks and all this right here. And rushing back, people bumping into each other, they're rushing because it's Friday. And we got to try to cram as much weekend in as we possibly can because Monday we got to go back and continue the same cycle over and over and over again. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to provide happiness, and we are looking with great hope for freedom from what's going on. That things are moving so fast, and but we haven't realized that just overhead, what we are experiencing is the depression of a system that is weighing on our back, because when you was on the job that you just left from, you was expending human energy, and that is the real money. But you keep trying to look for something else, for some glimmer of hope. Reality.
As an African American nation, you see, and you can deal with the African continent as an African American nation. With your accumulated wealth and power and economic organization, you can now begin to have a major impact on U.S. foreign policy and transform that policy in a way that it stimulates the economic development of African nations. You can make African nations now receive favored nation treatment. You see, lower tariffs against African manufactured products. Create a market for the sale of African manufactured products within this country, you see. See, people will tell you that it's because the Japanese were so industrious, or because they had such great family values, or because they were Confucians, and all of this is the reason why now they're an economic power in the world. Well, if that's the case, why weren't they an economic power 2,000 years ago? It takes more than that. Why did they only become an economic power basically after World War II? Because of the nature of what? The relationship that this country, what, had with them. A relationship that was fundamentally different from the relationship it has with African nations. Why is Korea going today, ladies and gentlemen? Because they sent black men over there to die in the soil of Korea and to protect Korea as an investment market for white men. And black men and women over there today still protecting South Korea as a market for investment for white men and white people. And yet it's black lives that were given and black tax money that executed that war over there and that built this investment possibility. It is black taxes that maintains the ships and the airfields and the other things that also preserve what? The investment possibilities for private capital. And so you have public capital being spent in the interest of private wealth. And then they try to tell you in America that you have no right to ask for anything from the U.S. government. You understand? And yet this government took its industrial genius, its organization and so forth, and taught the Koreans industrial organization and development. Japan's highest economic award, an industrial award, is named after an American, the Walter Deming Prize, a very prestigious prize. Why? Because it was Walter Deming who basically taught the Japanese industrial organization and production. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, it was what? The relationship of the United States government and the type of relationship that this government had with Japan, opening its markets, lending its money, rebuilding its infrastructure, protecting it against the incursion of Russians and other people, providing a nuclear umbrella and all of this for the Japanese. And then they're going to tell you that they're here because they have family values. You're out of your mind. And then they're going to make, and by implication, try to tell you that the Africans don't. That the Africans are lazy. That the Africans are miseducated. That the Africans are this and the Africans are that. Come on, don't believe that mess. It is a result of the fact of U.S. policy, which means then that the African American, which I believe is the central principle to the advancement of African people the world over, must organize economically so that we can organize politically. Open these markets up to African manufacturing the world over. So that the Africans in the diaspora, in Africa, in the Caribbean, and other places, can have places and markets for the selling of their products. Am I making myself clear? Yes. Now we even have large numbers of Africans in Europe, you see. So if we build in a network of Africans right in this country, build a marketing system for Africans in this country, and also use the accumulated capital we get from that market to even invade the European system in America. Reginald Lewis died this week. Very interested in this. How does a man capture a national food company? We have to learn this. How do we capture? We don't have to recreate the wheel. Let's buy them out. You see, let's control them. Let's use our consumer power to bring them under control as people and have them operate in our interests as people, you see. And when we do that, then, we can build a pan-African universe. We can use the African diaspora, as every group has used this diaspora, based on its ethnic identity, based on its cultural commonalities, to enhance its power in the world. The Japanese are relating, who are Asians, are relating to whom? Asians, and building an Asian realm. The Latinos are building a Latino realm. The Mexicans and other Latinos now are taking up the American coast, right from California, right around the rims of Southwest America, right on through what? Florida. Because of what? They're getting ready to become the main exporters and importers of what? Latin American products and be the controllers of Latin American trade. Before you know anything, as African people, we will be locked in completely from every coast in America. You see? And we had better move in Alabama, in the coast of Mississippi, in Georgia, and Florida, South Carolina, North Carolina, and keep some of that stuff so that we can engage in the Atlantic trade with our people, so that we can be in control of African products that move out of here and African products that move in here. If not, we shall be doomed to destruction by this system. Crisis is opportunity. Racial identity, cultural identity, is the means by which African people will reclaim their own. Thank you very much. Thank you, John.
All right. Oh, hold on. Before you go. All right. No. You have time for Q&A, Amos. Question and answers, no.
Proposal, and I gave it in here, about 200-300 people one day when Dr. Ben was here, and it was about $25 a week that we can put together every week to get our building fund, and we would have had it right now. And we've been doing this for 2 years over here right now. And that same proposal, I go to my job, and the unconscious people got 14 people together to go through and they get their building. I couldn't get none from here. And I got 2 people from my job who know nothing about history to get involved with it. And I felt very bad that I couldn't get nobody from here to do that. And I found that basically through this is that basically we have CMBD people, conscious but not committed.
Yeah, okay.
And CNC people, conscious and committed. And one of the things I think I can help you with is that one of the brothers that is helping me with this here project that we do this introduction with, he's the head of a credit union.
Oh, great, great.
He would be glad to meet with you.
Great.
To help you, because he runs one already.
Great, great, great networking. Okay, I want, in the light of the time, I won't elaborate on this too much. But I think some people obviously sort of, as I tried to get across in the lecture, misidentify what culture is about, you see, and do not recognize that it involves commitment and ultimately doing. Some people, too, frankly, have not been really transformed inside, and often are into this, I say, doing the right thing for the wrong reason sometimes, you see, still being somewhat reactionary. Others who come through this so perfectionistic are still so filled with hostility and anger until any little what they perceive as deviation or lack of purity is an excuse for them to scatter the whole thing and to take away the whole thing, or to blame the others for not being conscious enough, African-centered enough, and therefore they can't operate with these unconscious people. And so what you have is the very ones that you need to work and to become models and so forth are using the excuse of how others are unconscious as a basis for themselves not acting, and yet not realizing the fact that if we were all what we should be already, then we wouldn't have to be going through this at all. That our whole purpose, one of our major purposes, is to create a consciousness in people which recognizes that it is not there.
And Brother Amos Wilson, even tonight, when we pick out a building, if some people in here would help me go pick out a building site that we need, everybody up here should be running up saying, what can I do so we can pick out this building? I'm the one that got to run and get this building. Because basically the people here should pick out more consciousness than the people that are not here.
Well, there's still people who are suffering from lack of self-confidence, still despite, you know, the superficial things, are still yet wrestling with the ability to really trust each other and to really fully give themselves to an organization. And, of course, we all, to a degree, are still wrestling with these problems and issues. And some then still have not really moved forward in their personality. This is the reason why I tell people often that the ideology that the person projects is not the only thing you should measure them by. You really must measure them by their personality, you see, and look at them in terms of persons. And you got to also try to figure out why they got into what they're into. Because sometimes all the reasons for being African-centered or looking African-centered are not healthy, you see. There are many of those who have backed into African-centeredness who, because they were rejected, and anger, you see, sort of came into it. And so in a sense, they still harbor a great love and desire for their masters, or they still harbor the original attitudes. And so if the other people were to send a signal that they were genuinely ready to accept them, they would drop their African dress immediately and go right back. This is the reason why I tell people, you can't enter this African-centered approach based on rejection, you see. You must believe in this approach and our ideas in other words, what you believe in, you should believe in had white folk never existed in the world. You see, it should not really be connected to the way white folks have treated you. You see, so if you back into African-centeredness based on a mere reaction to rejection by white folk, it means really psychologically that they still have control over you, and you're still holding out hope, and you're still really acting on a reactionary level. But when you operate on the fact that this is the kind of culture I would want and the kind of relationships I would want, even if white folk never existed in history, then you're not connected with their actions and so forth, but you're motivated by something that comes from within the self and for the self. And this is what you must see in people you seek to deal with, because often there are those who will even go along with you, but who, when the time comes that whites indicate that, you know, they have some genuine feeling, will betray you and turn you over. So we just have to be more perceptive. Was this?
Well, trying to work with some young people, I was turned off to Christianity based on the people that attend the church, the fact that they could escape from evil deeds by praying heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that in the nationalist in the community and in the Mexican circuit, there are a lot of people that attend, and that is their commitment to the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have to stay in council as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that at every lecture, it has to be what he said. And I listened to Dr. Farr, and he said the same thing, but no one seemed to hear him. Mm-hmm. At the end of the lecture, he said, I'm not writing so that you can read this and go home. I'm writing so that you can read this and act.
Mm-hmm.
And our lecturers continue to say that, and must continue, I suppose. But as I was saying about the Christian church, I mean, what do you do? I left that alone, and it changes a lot of people away from lectures. It changes, like, I don't want to hear any more lectures, but mm-hmm. I have a philosophy like
thank you.
I want people to act. A man is known by his deeds.
Yes.
If you want to know a man's personality,
mm-hmm.
he's known by his deeds. Mm-hmm. And we come in all different shapes and forms. African people, and if we find help in all different shapes and forms, but what I would like to recommend is there's such a small pool of people who are willing to act that perhaps we could share some of these people among the organizations.
Thank you, kind. I appreciate your comments very much. We have to get over this issue sometimes, what I call a secular religion, too, where people are coming to the lectures basically looking for a rush. And while, of course, the lectures should invigorate us, and that's one of their purposes, is also to invigorate, to maintain faith and so forth. But we can't let that be the sole purpose. And I find many people still are sort of caught up, who, even though they're out of the church, in a sense, they're still in it. you see, and they've secularized their need for some kind of jolt, and that can become addictive. It's also very rough sometimes, to be honest with you, on us as lecturers, particularly on me, because there are many times when I would really sometimes rather just talk, you know, and interact. And yet, even though many of us out of the church, we still want to be preached to. That's one thing about the oral tradition, you see, that we have to analyze. And that oral tradition was to a great extent sometimes also used to create emotion and feeling, and that has its place, you see. But we also have to watch out, because many of the things we need to know and learn cannot be delivered in that style. And yet, we are caught in the trap sometimes that if you don't, then people are falling asleep on you, or they, you know, not paying attention to you and so forth. So gradually I hope we can move to a style where we can be a bit more instructive, a bit more even-toned to deliver really some solid information. And of course, hopefully we will deliver information more closely related to actual activity as well. I know we got to inform and teach, but we also have to do this. The place I have over there is not just a place for us, those people who've been there know that we can hold up to 200 people in that place. I've offered the community the use of the facilities as well, yes, and we have a space that any of people in our community can use, and we cooperate with our community for using the facilities. We have the facilities for the community. And we charge or don't charge or whatever, depending on what people are. The rent is going to get paid. So, you know, we're making ourselves available. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this is a real simple question. I want to identify some other literature on, you know, defining the problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You were talking about Castle Williams' book.
Mm-hmm. There's a book, I don't know whether it's being distributed up here, Nation Building, by a person named Koto. Yes, excellent, excellent book, particularly in the context of African centered education, but it's African centered education structured in a way that I mentioned earlier, that I think very much is structured in terms of nation building, and has nation building as the apex of what the education is about. And he lays out in detail, his is the only one I've seen that really lays out in detail an African-centered education that moves all the way from spirituality right down to computer science and technology. So there's nothing left out of it. You know, it doesn't stop at history and culture and so forth, but it goes right now. It goes right on into political science. It includes political science and the whole nine yards of it, because it's designed for power.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Let's take a look at some solutions that we can do. Right here in Jacksonville, Florida, what we are doing is we have taken responsibility for growing our own food, and taking on information in regards to the fact that we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that there are no self-sustaining communities inside the United States that are controlled and owned by people of African descent. So what we are doing here, right here, where we are growing our own food. We are building our infrastructure for our own communities so that we can take total and full control of these communities, marking these territories, and providing security for the women and children and everybody else inside the community as a solution to the problem. Okay, and whatever it takes, we're prepared to deal with it. And I love my illustrious brother and his words. He said, by any means necessary. Okay, so we're going to move on. I want to know, let's get to the bottom line of let's deal with the spending habits of our money. Why do we spend so much money? We're going to deal with that, okay?
Holy are you, holy are you. There is no God
you.
But you.
Uh-huh.
There is no God but you.
I need to talk to y'all for a minute.
Praise be the Lord.
This at 1190 WLIB, World Leadership in Broadcasting. Amos Wilson, our topic is the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. And we had a caller just a moment ago who raised the economic dimension, and certainly, I guess, the economic possibility. I constantly have had conversations about the potential that we have in terms of being an economic force. And it, there's no point in repeating the numbers of us who are in churches, community organizations, and how in just one weekend, you know, we could raise, you know, obviously enough money to create our own banking system.
Certainly.
In one weekend. Professor Wilson, that caller was reaching out.
That's in part the effect of, self-hatred, which leads to a squandering of economic resources. The inability of the black community to use its tremendous economic wealth for its own interests is indicative of the issue that we're talking about here today.
Mm-hmm.
We will, I hope, get around to talking about, when I talk about the effects of dealing with self-hatred, one of the effects, of course, is the misspending of money. And
how so though? How does that work?
Because money is misspent again to relieve pain, you see, to compensate for inferiorities, and because the individual has been reversed, which we'll have to explain at some later point, you will see a situation where almost inevitably the spending for getting over an inferiority complex involves spending the money with the person who gave it to you in the first place.
Wait a minute. There's something you have, yes, a thing about anger and resentment binding the oppressor to the oppressor.
Yes, and this is a part of the aspect of it, you see.
Mm.
You want to buy the approval. You want to buy, you mentioned even in the Garvey statement, you want to buy the products that restructure the image. And because you see, the essence of controlling people is to provoke a desire in them. And then, of course, have control of the satisfaction of that desire. You see?
Mm.
And that's at the foundation of the capitalist system and of the economic system, you see. And you can provoke that desire in them either through anger, through hatred, through direct tantalizing of the individual. See, the key to being in the ruling class is to create desire first,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and to have control over the resources for the satisfaction of the desire.
So provoke a desire, then service the need.
Then service the need.
Yeah.
But you also lay the conditions down for getting the need serviced, and that way you create the behavior in the process, and you create the personality in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And those who can't get into that don't fit.
No, not at all. So the idea is, if you're cursed, often we say your behavior then will involve trying to get the person to remove the curse, which sends you back to the individual asking their acceptance. And, of course, often they will make a few demands on you, which you have to fulfill before you can gain that acceptance back again. If you feel as if, and see what happens when we're robbed, and we are robbed as people. We see who have it, who has what has been robbed from us. But we also forced to buy it back because we can't buy it from ourselves. We don't have it. You see? And so when we try to compensate for a loss of status by dressing well, we got to go to Bloomies or somewhere, you know. Mm-hmm. When we try to compensate for a loss of a status by buying a house, we go to the white community, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Or by eating at, and we want to show those people that we're as good as they are, so forth. You see, all of this effort to compensate and prove something and to be accepted and all of this kind of or to escape is going to send you directly back to the people who created the situation in the first place.
Amazing.
You see, so it works very beautifully. That caller had an implication there that was that, again, people don't deal with, except I've seen Chancellor William deal with it in this book, and I try to get people to understand, read the whole of the Chancellor William book, because often they read it as history, you see.
That's your book titles here, too.
Yeah, The Destruction of Black Civilization.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, at the back part of that book, he's dealing with, of course, Reconstruction, and he's dealing with political, social, and economic plans. Of course, when you study the movement of Marcus Garvey, as well as the movement of Elijah Muhammad and others, you see it implied there. And that implication is nation building.
Mm-hmm.
The creation of a national network, economic, social, political network by black people, and a national economic program of development, political, social program by black people. Now, I don't want this to be interpreted as advocating the overthrow of the United States government, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the kind of informal organization that you often find in other ethnic groups that have, you know, so-and-so congresses and congress of leaders from various regions and situations of this kind that come together and have a policy, political, social, economic policy, which is coordinated nationwide and then into worldwide as well. We have not done that. We have the foundation for it. We have
right.
a whole network of black churches. You also saw the network being laid in Elijah Muhammad's system as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna have to look at that, see how we can informally set up this kind of network, because once we do this, we can lay the basis for real productive economics. And I will talk later on about how productive economics in the United States is tied to the productive economics of African people the world over. And the economic activity of black people in this country is crucial to economic development of African people the world over.
Professor Amos Wilson.
Okay, Moses, we're back. If you have a question or comment, now's the time to raise your hand. If you need some assistance with something, this is what we're here for tonight. So if you have a question for assistance, then we're here to open up the line so we can hear what you got to say. I'm going to start with our area code 651. 651, are you there?
Yes, 651 is here.
Okay, what can we help you with, sister?
Well, PC, first of all, let me say that, you know, my name is Queen Nucci. I run a awareness to conscious minds, and you kind of posted that this show would be on tonight. And so just to elaborate a little bit about economic development, true economic development to me is when we can go and buy all these I believe it's like 18 million border and vacant properties across this country. And when we have the buying power to buy them for a dollar and to employ our own people in fixing those up and being able to put them back on the market, to me, that's a true economic development. And I really don't get a chance to see that kind of plan put in action for us, because there is a lot of hidden hands, if you will, that don't allow us to have our own control of real economic development. Most people that are running for these elected offices, the political stance is that their economic development is infrastructure and rebuilding these condominiums and basically locking us out of our own community. So with that, I'm going to yield to the floor.
Okay. Well, sister, in answer to your question, to your statements that you made, first of all, at this critical hour, based on the information that we've already laid out, the way I see it is that we're going to have to, just like I said, we're going to have to create our own system. But my question to you is, what is it that we already have discussed here tonight that we can help you with?
Basically, I would like help with knowing how to purchase those vacant and boarded properties and trying to establish some sort of internal workforce for us as a people and make that a true job opportunity.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you what you do. After 10:30 in the morning, tomorrow, give me a call. We can discuss that. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank
you. So we can get to a solution to the problem.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling in. Okay. Area code 404. What can we do for you as a solution? 404. Come on in.
Okay, this is Cheetah Man Mutawil, Cherokee County, Georgia. Okay, I know that from studying and whatever, a lot of the pharmaceutical and drugs coming in from Colombia and Coca-Cola, you know, all that support the economic backbone of the U.S. corporation, like Coca-Cola, where I stay downtown Atlanta, since you know, they ordered 333 leaves of the coca leaf plant. That's an ancient plant that the pharaohs used to do. If we did,
what can we do to help?
Okay,
you
like for me? Okay, okay, the Native Indians here get to do opium and marijuana on their reservations, right? They get to grow the marijuana in the state of Michigan. You get to grow the marijuana yourself, and you can make like 1,000 products out of that plant alone. And it kills all kind of diseases. And the cocaine do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? If you do the chemistry and do the reconstruction, they'll take the bugs out and reconstruct it back to its purest form. We can have a great product. It open up the third eye and the pineal gland, and it activate the chakra too. But a lot of people, that's why they try to make you think it's a bad product. You know what I'm saying? But science.
My question to you is, what can we do for you now?
Well, really, in my nationality card or my world ID, I want to be able to put that a part of my activate my religious freedom at 1993 and put that in my culture and my custom. I want to study it. I want to do the science behind it and test it, you know what I'm saying, like that. For me, I want that in my nationality card. So, like, just say if I was just to go to over the border, like a passport, and go over the border to Colombia, Mexico, I want to be able to come back over the border with no problem and take it back to my university or my school. Whatever, my private school.
Well, we got a solution. We have a solution for that. We can help you with identification. We just ran about five or six clips on identification. So if you give me a call tomorrow, we'll discuss that. Could you do that?
Yes, sir.
All right. I certainly appreciate you calling in and going on down the line. Area code 987. Come on in. 978.
Peace, Brother T. Can you hear me?
Yeah, he's loud and clear. Come on.
Hi. Yeah, this is Gamal from Massachusetts.
Okay.
I was calling. I was wondering, what can we do? Like, let's say if we want to change our name, because you know, I suspect that I have a European last name, but I also heard that was originally a Moorish name. But I was just wondering, like, you know, what one has to do to change their name. Is there information on that on the website?
Yes, sir. There is. Yeah. All of that's there. How to go about doing that, but it's in a whole different format, a whole different way of dealing with the situation so that everything will be all right and you are able to move freely through society. Yes, that is there. You have another question?
Yeah, actually not a question, but a comment, if it's okay with you.
No, we're looking for what we can do to help you.
Okay. But, well, can I just make that comment, man, because the brother on the the brother in his speech, he spoke about how Europeans, they spread throughout the world and they were working as a network, right? And I just wanted to say, right, I mean, I grew up here, but I wish I was like in Panama, man, so I could connect with brothers here and bring them over there. Because right now, Europeans from Europe, France, Holland, Europeans from here, Europeans from Canada, they over there, they building everything together with the Spanish Europeans that were already there. So it's like international European connection in Panama. But when it comes to Moors, you don't see Moors traveling down there. You don't see us connecting on an international level. Even that, not even in a
Okay, well, let me ask you this now. Let me ask you this. What is the solution, in your opinion, to that?
My solution would be, this is all so-called black man. He told me, the Chinese deal in pennies. We learn how to deal in dollars. If we, any little pinch of anything that we can work collectively with each other and, you know, and share with each other in an honest way, doing business with each other. It doesn't have to be $1 billion. It can be anything. You see, working with each other and passing money around, our energy, sharing it with each other. You know, I think that would be a great start. You know, while we don't have to focus on, oh, we want to start the $1 million corporation. No, just I'm your neighbor. You know what I'm saying? I may have something that we can do some business. It could be a $20 business. That's a beginning. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Let me ask you this. In your opinion, you've been with yourself all your natural life. In your opinion, what is it that you're willing to share or that you have or you've been given by the Creator that you can do better than anybody else because it was given to you by your Creator that you are prepared to bring to the table to start the production process? What do you have?
Well, I've done many things, just like you. You know, I work in construction. I used to work in high-rise buildings. I know I got knowledge of electricity, plumbing, concrete, Class C welding, working with steel, you know, and other things. I also used to, in my late teens to early 20s, I used to do commercial painting. Like I used to do murals for restaurants. I did some murals for festivals in Washington, D.C. for a few newspapers, like banners and things like that they used to put on the street. And I used to do the murals for, like, you know, signs for restaurants. And I used to do, like, you know, views and things like that. And, I used to do painting. And also, like, I got skills and I play music. I know, like, all the so-called Afro-Latin beats, percussion, I know how to play them.
You're a multicultural man. You have many talents. But let me ask you this. Which one of those talents are you willing to bring to the table and say, this is what I'm going to specialize in the creation of our network? Which one?
I would say whichever one works at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, can you tell me which one you love more than all that you say you know? Which one do you love doing the best? That's most comfortable, that you're willing to do and you can do it with ease?
I don't even have to think much to answer that one. I love anything that works. That's what I love.
Okay. Do you have a plan for anything that you could use to start? What do you say you would start with?
Yeah, I'm working on a plan or something that I'm creating right now. So this is my own little invention. It's nothing. You know, it's not like a computer or nothing like that. It's something practical, something that's to be used manually. But it's something that I want to introduce to Moors, and I also want to break a record. That's my dream. If I can break a record, I heard of a man from Istanbul that he broke that record. I want to break that record, And I, by then, you know, I want to be completely, if, you know, it's just a dream. But if it happens, I want to be completely, you know, carrying my nationality and all the titles that belong to us. And so I can, if I do break that record, that it will go on the record as me being a Moor that broke that record and dedicate that to Moors. And then introduce that, whichever, well, I'm not going to say what it is, you know, because chances are, you know, I may not do it, but
introduce that
to Moors. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, brother, I certainly appreciate you calling in, and I thank you. And then we're gonna proceed. We have 33 minutes going on. If there's anybody else who have any more questions, comments, if you have something that we can aid you with now, go ahead and raise your hand that you can use now to actually go ahead and get the job done, something that you can bring to the table that we can actually use to
Okay, Moors, here it is. You know, most people don't know that when they purchase their home and they sign the contract in the beginning that the house was bought and paid for at that point. But then they signed that old servicing agreement and they told them that the bank was going to give them a loan to go to the bank, fill out the papers. The bank don't give you any money. And the next thing you know, you got a company sending you a bill for a mortgage. We have a system to totally get rid of the whole thing. Contact us at newfreehelpgroup.com. That's New Free Help Group. One more time. You know, Moore's. A lot of us have student loan debt, we got child support, we got all these type of debts piled up on us. But what we have is without a doubt the most powerful solution for the complete elimination, cancellation, and disablement of your student loan and other loans inside the United States today. With these powerful tools, your lender has to surrender, and that's just the bottom line, because affidavits are very powerful tools when used correctly. Contact Tahaka Amana L. Bay at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. or go directly to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's newfreehelpgroup.com. And we get you out. That's the
holy are you, holy are you. There is no God
yeah.
but There is no God but you.
I need to talk to y'all for a minute.
Praise the Lord.
We'll come back with our guest, Professor Amos Wilson, and the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. Our topic is the psychology of self-hatred among global African people. Our guest, Professor Amos Wilson, professor of psychology at the New York Institute of Technology and also at the College of New Rochelle. He's also author of the book, The Developmental Psychology of the Black Child. Professor Wilson, we had a guest who, rather a caller just a few moments ago who raised an area with Skinner, I do believe.
A very, very important area, because the topic of what we call Skinnerian conditioning, or instrumental conditioning, is a standard topic raised in psychology. The essence of Skinnerian conditioning, or sometimes SR psychology, particularly of Skinner's type, named after B.F. Skinner, Harvard professor, who didn't so much discover new principles as just codify ways of behaving and consequences that already existed. The essence of it is that behavior is controlled by its consequences.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That behavior that brings good consequences tends to be repeated and increased in frequency and probability of occurrence. Behavior that's followed by negative consequences tend to be decreased or eliminated. And a very simple but very powerful principle, and that's really the essence of it. And conditioning involves, to a good extent, you see, manipulating reward and punishment in order to bring about particular changes in behavior, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very, very important psychology that many black students are educated in and don't understand at all.
What's the twist on it in terms of self-hatred?
The twist is the essence of power. You see, at first, this psychology is often presented in terms of a rat. Okay? Mm-hmm. You put a rat in a box or in some condition, and if it behaves in a certain way, you give it something to eat, you give it something to drink. Okay? That's a reward. If it behaves in a way you don't want it to behave, you give it an electric shock or punish it or don't give it food.
Ooh.
So, of course, because it wants to eat, and of course, you make sure you've starved it before you put it in to the system. So if it wants to eat and so forth, it eventually learns the relationship between certain behavior and certain consequences. So if by standing up on its two hind feet it gets fed, it will stand up on its two hind feet much more frequently than before the system was put into order, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So the rat is conditioned by living under those circumstances. The experimenter who has control of the rat, you see, can create certain behaviors or reinforce certain behaviors in the rat by determining which behaviors will be rewarded and which will be punished.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where black students are miseducated in these psychology classes is that often the lesson is left right there. Okay? And I use this experiment, as a matter of fact, to get people to understand the difference between equal education and a relevant education, of how a black student can be equally educated with a white student. They just learn the same thing and be made dumb by the same learning. Now, a black student and a white student can learn that principle in the same way, but it doesn't have the same effects. Because you can look at this relationship between the experimenter and this rat as a power relationship, as a political relationship, you see, which says this experimenter, who has control of the rewards and punishments of this rat, is able to create behavior in this rat as a result of having that power. You see, being that he has control over the rewards and punishment, he uses that control to condition the rat. And then when I move on from there, I ask my students then, who has control of the water that comes into your neighborhood? Who has control of the food, the control of the jobs, controls of the symbols of status, control of information? And we go on and on. Can't you see that you are the rat?
Mm-hmm.
You see, this is where you end when you're talking to black students. You don't end with the rat and the experimenter.
Right.
You see, and a black student who has not been taught that, and who has not been taken to have that experiment moved out of its standard presentation into politics and into the reality of his life, is miseducated, even though he's learning the same thing that the white student learned, you see. And this is why I try to get across to the people. You must understand, having our people learn the same thing a white student learned is not going to get you out of your condition. If you look up on the Harlems, the Bed-Stuys, even whole nations where blacks live in the world today, they are boxes. And we are rats in them. And when you see the IMF and the United States banks and the other European countries manipulating reward and punishment, selling weapons and creating wars and doing all of these kinds of things, you have in principle the same thing, you see. And just as that rat's behavior is being created by the manipulation of reward and punishment, the behavior and attitudes of black people are being created by the control of Europeans of rewards and punishment. This is the essence of power. The essence of power is the ability to selectively reward and punish what you want. Now, how does this relate to self-hatred? I hate to hold you to your people up, but I just want to, because this is a vital topic in psychology, and black students should deal with this topic very thoroughly because there's deep implication. When this is talked about, often the black student identifies himself with the experimenter, and the experimenter is a white man. And it's, you identify with him because he's a human being, and the other thing is a rat. But when you identify with that experimenter, you're misidentifying yourself. You see, when the white student identifies himself with the experimenter, his identity is closer to reality, you see. And so in learning the same thing, his racial position is reinforced, even though it appears that he's getting the same education, you see. And people must learn the difference between so-called equal education. Getting equal education for black students is not getting them to learn the same thing white students are learning. And we're going to have to understand this. So then just as that conditioning situation presented by Skinner is what we call a rat in the box, the nations where our people's lives are controlled through the manipulation of Europeans is what we can call a nigger box. Mm-hmm. It is where Africans are created into niggers as a result of the manipulation of reward and punishment by Europeans. We have to keep that in mind. How do you create self-hatred then? A certain of that rat's behavior is associated with reward, with pleasure, with good feelings, with security, with love, if you want to call it that, you see. Mm-hmm. So whenever he performs that, he moves toward that behavior, and he emits that behavior because it brings those rewards. Or he emits that behavior because it helps him to escape from pain, from hunger, from fear, from insecurity, you see. Mm-hmm. And that's another method used in these Skinner boxes, you see, of where if we don't reward the animal, we permit him to escape pain. Okay, now then, listen. All right, now, just one other thing.
I saw echoes of slavery in my mind. I know.
Definitely.
Yeah,
and this is going to go back now to drug behavior and everything else we'll get to, you know, later on. Now, self-hatred, and this goes back to the first statement I made as one of the first methods that's used to breed self-hatred. Remember, the association of innate and personal and group characteristics with negative feelings and so forth. So then, how do you create self-hatred? You make everything that you innately are negative and painful. So that being black is made to be painful. Being African is made to be painful, you see. Identifying yourself as an African is means you don't get rewarded. It means you go hungry. It means you don't get accepted, you see. Yeah. And so by stacking all of these negatives onto African characteristics, it motivates the African to escape his characteristics and seek relief through that escape.
There's something that came up that is just such a graphic illustration of what you're saying in an advertising campaign that never made Madison Avenue. A friend of mine was involved in this, and I don't know what the final rejection was based on, but this was in the 60s, and it was for an aspirin, and it said it was going to be positioned in the subways as, this is what you need for the black ache.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was like, you know, when the whole deal and the whole experience of being black is just too much. Take this for the black ache.
And believe me, we move toward pain relievers, which is, of course, why you look at the drugs, and these fundamentally are pain relievers.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not only talk about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk later on about sexual addictions, love, what we call love in our community, and other kinds of behaviors that are relievers of pain. One other statement, because the caller admitted something very, very, very rich and fundamental. This self-hatred also is related to this Skinner paradigm. You see, this is how you take knowledge in books and you Africanize it by seeing how it applies and can be used to your own interests.
Yes, yes.
You see,
yes.
And so, but I'll speak about that later. I just want to. Oh, you got it.
But let's get to the calls.
One more. Because this relates.
These people are gonna kill me now.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But this relates to the second principle I wanted to mention that produces self-hatred, and that is to actually create the negative characteristics in the individual group via what I call the self-fulfilling vicious cycle, created incompetences and the creation of subcultures. But through the use of this Skinnerian conditioning, create the actual characteristics that you will come to hate later on, and that the individual will come to hate in and of himself. In other words, the black man, as we see him today, is a created person.
Mm. Okay.
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 And he's
an environmentally created person.
Yes, he is conditioned. Mm-hmm. You see, one of the reasons why you want to remove European power is that you want by removing that power, you also remove his ability to create you.
Mm-hmm.
And by gaining that power yourself, you move into the ability to be self-creating.
WLIB, I'm Gary Bird. You're on the air with Professor Amos Wilson.
Okay, Moore, we back. Let's start dealing with the solutions. First of all, this is some things that we have to understand. Every individual is born into this life, and when you come in this life, you stand alone. You're there. You have your support systems. You have your mother, father. A lot of us just have mother. Some of us go to orphanages or what have you. But we have to deal with the fact that we are here. And what we are seeing, what we are witnessing, and what we are experiencing, the best thing to do is to take responsibility for us, the remnant of us that the Creator has given us. If we are fortunate enough to have a head, a torso, the arms, the legs, and the body, however, we're fortunate, there's no accidents, there's no birth defects or what have you, we are faced with these things. So therefore, we have to try to do our very best to transform ourselves in the best thing, person, people that we can possibly be. But where a lot of us has been going off the track is we have been relying on the system to aid us in making that transformation. And we have to understand that we are people of African descent. We have to look at ourselves from that position and that perspective. People who are not us look at themselves from their perspective and situation, and they adjust accordingly. So we're going to have to do the same thing. We got to take some things and we put out in the garbage can. One of the first thing I like to recommend that you throw in there is multiculturalism. Get it out your brain, look at yourself, and look at the totality of your species and race inside the United States. When you began to do that, there are spaces and places and people, places and things that will provide you happiness in different places that you go. But when you constantly deal with individualism, well, I got to look out for me, and he's not doing this over here, and I'm just going to deal with it, and I don't want to, you can't do that. What you're going to have to do is you're going to have to constantly look at not only yourself as being what you are and embracing that and loving that, with your ancient culture and ancient story, it is magnificent. There is no comparison. But when you take that along with looking at the collectivism of your nation, then you have something to be proud of. I can assure you, if you just try it, find out what it is that you like to do and you can do it well, and nobody else can do it like you above everything else that you think you know, and be prepared to use that as a token and as a presentment and as something to bring to the table to say, I will do this particular thing. But until you decide on that and until you are prepared to bring that to the table, you're going to be tossed to and fro just like an oyster in the ocean. See, an oyster doesn't have a rowing paddle. Oyster doesn't have a rowboat. Oyster just sits there. If the tides and current move him some way, he just go over there because he doesn't have any power. And this is the same thing that we are victims of, because we are refusing to go back and embracing our story. We can start as individuals right in our own home, but we have to, at one point in time, look at the situation collectively as a nation of people. When you, if you're too close to the forest, you too close to the trees, you can't see the forest. If you back, stand up and look at it. Do the research. It doesn't take a whole lot. Look at all the wars. Look at the crimes. Look at the, you know, just ask yourself, how have we collectively fared after everything that we did to support everybody else? You have absolutely nothing. And until you change your thinking, you will remain in the same position until it is time for them to flush you down the toilet. It is vital. It is 1 minute to midnight. It's time now. This is the month of May. Mother's Day came. People of African descent running, they all in the store, they buying this, that, and the other. Well, it's Mother's Day. According to what precept will your culture? Help me out. It's Memorial Day. According to who? According to who? Research it. Find out, is it indigenous to your culture? And if it's not, what are you doing taking your labor and investing in it? Because you keep ending up in the same position year after year after year after year, and you accomplish nothing, the same stagnate position. And any man traveling across the desert to have any knowledge, even in the jungle, when he comes upon water that is still, the water is poison. If the water is not moving, if it's not flowing and stuff, you do not drink the water because it's not moving. But you got to change your thinking. When it comes to holidays and this, that, and the other, just ask yourself a question right there in your mind. You don't have to disturb the peace. What does the 4th of July have to do with my ancient culture, and where did it come from, and when did my ancestors invent it? And if they didn't, who did? And why should I take my hard-earned energy and continue to remain stagnant? Because at the end of the year, you discover that you're in the same place that you was in the year before, because you keep doing the wrong thing. All we got to do is turn around and get it right. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to deal with part two tomorrow. Keep in mind that for those of you who plan on coming down here to Jacksonville, Florida, to the Summit of the Moors on August the 16th to the 18th, we welcome you. And you can call area code 706-284-9808. That's 706-284-9808. And Brother Diallo, D-I-A-L-L-O-S-E-K-O-U, Diallo School, will aid you in information involving coming down to the summit. This time we will be in the Wyndham Hotel. We welcome you, and that you can see what we're doing down here. We are attempting to transform a neighborhood into a thriving community, and we're prepared to deal with that and make that a reality through any means necessary. So come on down, and we welcome you to come down here to see this thing with your own eyes. Also, I need you to, for those of you who are trapped by the tentacles of the United States Corporation through student loan debts, if you are paying a mortgage, you are making a mistake. Even if you think you have peace, if you have that amount of money going outside of your environment, it needs to be in your pocket, okay, so that you can have resources while they last to do certain things with, because there are people who still respect the American dollar, even though it has absolutely no value. but we haven't come to that realization yet. So go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. That's newfreehelpgroup.com.
Now, here's the deal, Morris. For anyone donating to Talkers Archives and you're getting your getting rid of your mortgage program, getting rid of your student loan debt, or just the total elimination of all contracts, we're going to give you Tahaka Archives to go along with that. That's going to be good up until July, the first day in July. In order to get that, contact me at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can go right there to newfreehelpgroup.com to take a look around. And don't forget, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll take care of you.
Okay, we're back. Now, some of us have student loan debt.
One more time. You know, Morris, a lot of us have student loan debt. We got child support. We got all these type of debts piled up on us. But what we have is, without a doubt, the most powerful solution for the complete elimination, cancellation, and disablement of your student loan and other loans inside the United States today. With these powerful tools, your lender has to surrender, and that's just the bottom line, because affidavits are very powerful tools when used correctly. Contact Tahaka Amana L. Bay at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. I'll go directly to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's newfreehelpgroup.com, and we get you out that thing. Don't forget, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll show you how to deal with it.
Okay. Now, we want to deal with one more thing. For those of you who are on your social sites, We do everything that we can to make the most powerful information available to you, so you will have it in your brain. We, day in and day out, I work tirelessly to move this stuff. And Facebook is just one place we put it. It goes all the way across the board so that our people can have access to doing that. That, to me, that's what I bring to the table. I have other things, but that is my primary focus through the broadcast. I'm a multi-talented person, but I do not believe in giving my brother anything that he can't use. I'll present it in every conceivable way. I work with him, and I really don't like to hold his hand, but sometimes I find myself in a position to hold your hand. I want you to know all that, because I want a man to man up. If you got all the tools of production, I feel like a man should do what he's supposed to do. But anyway, we're coming back tomorrow night with part two. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Telling you to change your way. I'm telling you I mean what I say. Last time I'm telling you to stop that jive before you find yourself outside. Oh baby, what you gonna do? I'm sick and tired fooling around with you.
Telling you to change your way. I'm telling you I mean what I say. Last time I'm telling you to stop that jive.